The MHI Industry Leadership Podcast brings together the solutions, providers, and thought leaders of the materials handling industry to talk about trends, technologies, solutions, and best practices to move the industry forward. Christian Dow is the Executive Vice President of Membership and Industry Leadership at MHI. In each episode, Christian will be talking to the leaders and members of MHI's industry groups. Let's join him now.
Hey, Frank.
Oh, good morning, Christian. How are you?
We have a kind of a special one today. We have an extra person on today. We don't normally have this many people on the podcast.
I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, but by virtue of the fact that two of them are named Matt, maybe we can kind of combine them into one. And it really is just two people. Who knows?
Yeah. And then what's the topic today?
So the topic today, which I think is, you can take it however you want, right? But more and more often in warehouses, DCs, you know, places like that, right, we are seeing robots of various kinds. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons and ups and downs of robots working alongside humans of other workers.
So we have three people that are involved in the robotics group for MHI. So who do we have?
Well, we have Matt Bush, who's the VP of Technology and Innovation and Research for KPI Solutions, hailing to us from the great state of Tennessee. We also have from the great state of, we decided he was out of the country, didn't we? Because he's in the San Francisco Bay Area.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah. So from that other country known as San Francisco, Matt Willis, the head of product from Third Wave Automation. And then finally, we have Randy, but his first name is Matt, but it's a silent Matt. That's not true. Randy Randolph, the VP of Channels and Partnerships for Geek Plus America. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Cool. Great to be here.
So why don't we start with Matt Bush? We'll start in alphabetical order with first names, of course, with Matt Bush. Matt, tell us a little bit about yourself, a KPI, and your background.
Okay. So Matt Bush, hail from KPI Solutions. KPI Solutions is a systems integrator. We focus on bringing technology neutral solutions to the marketplace and offer a end-to-end approach to the intralogistics space. So I've been around the industry for going on 25 years, and primarily those years were spent within the automotive industry. But over the past 5 years, I've been focused on systems integration.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, welcome. Thank you for joining us. How about Matt Willis?
Hey there. I'm Matt Willis. I'm the head of product at Third Wave Automation. We build autonomous forklifts, but focus on human in the loop as part of that solution. So we like to call that shared autonomy. So the idea here is that autonomy or humans on their own can do work. Putting them together and working together can do great work. And so we build solutions around that sort of premise. My background, I have a PhD in human-computer interactions, so very focused on how we design and build technology with humans in mind. And I've been working now in the industry for about 12 years in new technology, new products, robotics, those kinds of things. And I'm very happy to be working here at Third Wave, building the next generation of these types of devices.
Welcome. And then Randy, who is not Matt, Randy Randolph.
Well, good day to everyone. Thank you. I'm Randy Randolph. I'm the VP at Geek Plus and the Channels and Partnerships. Actually, KPI happens to be one of our key partners. So I've worked with Matt in the past, and I'm glad to be here today. Geek Plus is the largest AMR manufacturer in the world. We've got a significant footprint here in the Americas. We've been in the Americas for almost 4 years now. And we launched our company during the COVID Modex. Just an interesting time to launch. Today, we have over 80 systems live throughout the U.S. and the Central and South America. My experience in the industry, I've been in Auto ID, WMS, and high-end material handling systems, coupled with 3PL and now robotics for over 40 years. The last six and a half years, I've spent in the robotic space with robotic picking, and I'm just loving it here at Geek Plus. We have a portfolio of robots that solve problems, and couldn't be happier. Excellent. To join you today.
Yep. Well, a portfolio of robots, Christian.
Yes, a portfolio of robots.
Sounds impressive.
So why don't we start with how can robotics improve the work environment for the associate? And we'll start with you, Randy.
Sure. Well, thanks. Great question. The AMRs and robotic automated workstations, they really create a much better aligned environment for both associates and management. As a baseline, work cells are really designed to simplify picking tasks. And this simplicity and the guardrails that are part of this automation really help maintain accuracy and enable productivity. You know, associates want to be accurate, and managers want them to be accurate and productive. And with those outcomes, with both long-term employees and seasonal employees, both the associate and the manager align. So we, and just to simplify this a bit further, we look at automation in the warehouse with AMRs a lot like maybe Henry Ford did back in the early automation days of the assembly line. We're really now assembling orders the way cars used to be made. And that production line, that assembly line, is really good for both the management, the owners of the company, and the workers themselves.
Matt Bush, what are your thoughts on that question? In addition to what Randy was talking about, you know, kind of how do robotics improve the work environment? And you started off by talking kind of how about KPI uses a variety of solutions, right, in the robotic space to improve the lives of the workers. What are the things that you look for from the integrator standpoint?
There's two key aspects that we feel that robotics bring to the workplace. One of those, you're attacking those monotonous jobs, those jobs that people don't really want to do. There's a phrase, dull, dirty, and dangerous. Those are the tasks that are really attacked and targeted with robotic automation. Another thing we've been seeing, and some recent studies back this up, is that employee retention improves as robotics are adopted. So you're taking these really boring jobs, you're adding robots to them, you're making them cool jobs. So you're attracting the next generation of worker to work alongside these robots.
Are you sure, Matt, that it's not just because the robots are holding the workers hostage? Come on, let's be honest. Is that why retention is up? Why does it make it a stickier job? Why are more people interested in being there? You said it makes it a cool job, but I don't know if I totally understand. It seems like it's replacing people, is it not?
I've got kids, and I can tell you it's hard to pry them away from video games. So the next generation, if you make their job like a video game, it's going to be more sticky to retain those people. So I think as robotics evolve and as the applications evolve, that stickiness is only going to continue to grow where the next generation see these as cool jobs.
So it's not so much that it's taking, it's not that it's taking jobs away from people. It sounds like to me, you're saying that it's making those jobs that would normally be the dirty, dangerous, difficult, or whatever it was, boring, dull, I don't remember. The crappy jobs. It's taking those and making those better jobs?
Yes. It's creating, it's moving the low value down to automation, and the higher value is coming up to the human level. So humans are applying more value to the job than they are today. So it's a value proposition.
Interesting.
Matt Willis, give us some additional thoughts on this topic. This is probably somewhere you're gonna give us some insight that we wouldn't otherwise get.
Yeah. No, look, I couldn't more. I think a lot of implementing automation in these spaces is about redesigning work and making sure that we're putting that worker and the human first as part of that design. So it's not enough to just sort of say, okay, we have a workflow or a process that we need to automate. We've got an environment we need to make sure these robots are sort of moving around in. We have to sit back and consider, okay, the robot's going to be there in an aisle with a case picker or somebody else. How's it going to respond to them? How's it going to react to them? All the way through to what are the operators doing today? And so some of our approach has been saying, okay, warehouses are dull, dirty, dangerous places. And so the best place for those operators is actually not there. It's you know, in an office somewhere nearby, and instead of sitting on a forklift in a hot warehouse without suspension, I must say, these things for 8 hours a day, you're sitting in a nice office chair and you're controlling multiple ones of these robots. And then that way, you're doing the interesting parts of that job and not necessarily just driving from sort of A to B as you go through. One other thing I want to tap into here, because you talked about retention, Matt. We've seen the same thing. So with like things like remote operation interfaces and making it more like a game, and it, you know, like, hey, I have to manage this fleet of robots that's going on. We can tap into a different workforce as well. You know, people that otherwise wouldn't be, going out there looking for a manual forklift operation job are able to bring some of these other skills into that workforce, and all of a sudden you've got access to sort of many more people.
Yeah, so it's the challenge, and today workforce is still a major challenge. The last annual industry report that MHI put out said that labor workforce and labor retention and even finding qualified people is currently a challenge, and then retention is a huge challenge as well, right? People will job hop and things like that. But really, what you know, a lot of this will. You know, you're not getting rid of people, you're reallocating people, right? And so a lot of these things are these automation solutions are kind of taking over tasks that like the mundane, the 7 miles a day that some of these associates, and I like the word that Randy you put into your pre-work was calling them associates rather than workers or laborers, right? They're but a lot of times pickers and those roles, they can walk 7-8 miles a day. And by adding robots, you can eliminate a lot of that. Talk about, Matt, Matt Bush, do you have a little bit of insight into kind of how that changes and what are the other benefits that the associate will see and how productivity will go up for them?
Yeah, I think the key there is really bringing goods to pickers. Where in the past they were roaming around a warehouse trying to find the goods that they needed to fulfill an order. Today, those goods are being brought to them and presented to them in an ergonomic fashion where they can pick those items and fulfill an order more quickly without all those walk steps. Walk steps is definitely an inefficient process, and that is always targeted in any automated solution.
So let's talk about collaborative arm robots, Mr. Bush.
Okay.
So what is a collaborative arm robot?
So a collaborative robot is a form of robotic automation that's built to work safely with humans. But let's not focus on the component itself. Let's focus on the solution because there's collaborative arms out there that are branded as collaborative, but you need to focus on the environment that they are within and make sure that it is safe for the workers around them. Some of the advanced features of collaborative robots, you have force sensors, soft and rounded edges, and also you're limiting power and force capabilities. So that is key in collaborative robots is speed and payload. So you want to make sure that if there is a person in the vicinity, it's going to slow down and or stop before it collides with that person. So to do that, you have to limit the speed and limit the payload. So you're limiting ultimately that resulting force.
I see Frank thinking here. What are you thinking, Frank?
I think I'm still confused a little bit. Okay. Collaborative arm, is arm a is that an acronym or something? Because I'm imagining like this Dr. Octopus kind of, you know, sort of a thing, and like a guy wearing it and he's got multiple arms or something. I'm not sure that I'm totally clued in here.
No, it's a robot that's stationary, that's articulating around multiple joints. So it's just like a human arm, but it's fixed, where it's moving around and picking items up within that workspace.
Oh, so it's a row of severed arms. This is creepy. Christian, I don't know what in the world we're talking. Like, this is the strangest. Okay. So
yeah, the arm is one thing, and then they can add it to an AMR. And that's another thing. And so, Randy, you can give a little bit of insight into, are you seeing arms being added to robots commonly?
Yeah, I think we're seeing workstations that have collaborative arms, or are part of the collaborative solution for the worker. We are also seeing collaborative AMRs that will follow or lead a worker through a facility. AMRs that will show up when the worker needs them to show up and take away things that they need moved, and are able to do that in a safe and collaborative way. The arms on top of the robots, there are solutions out there. We actually make one in our portfolio. We don't see a lot of deployment for that, because people are generally looking, as Matt said, for a solution. And one element of that solution is productivity, and we're able to combine AMRs and stationary workstations a little bit for a higher productivity than moving those collaborative arms around.
No, you're not seeing them because they're terrifying. That's why you're not this thing riding around with his arm hanging out the top of it. And no, so now, in all seriousness, though, I think I understand. So it really is. It's another arm. But the thing that makes it collaborative is that the fact that it is just that it's working alongside someone. But you were talking about like sensors and things like that. Does it make it, because it's more safe, or what makes it a collaborative arm?
It makes it more safe because it is moving more slowly than a traditional robot that you would see behind a fence. And it also has force sensors, so it can tell when it's contacting something or someone, and it stops or slows down. But typically you want the human to be detected, and it slows down when it gets in the proximity of the human, rather than waiting for it to collide.
Okay. So Matt Willis, when these things become autonomous and start knowing that they're there, how long do you think it'll be before they take over? No, I'm just kidding. No, but there are, you know, and Matt mentioned something, or Matt Bush said something about being behind a fence, but I guess this would reduce accidents and things like that. But is there's still danger here, right? I mean, there's still, what are some things that are going into these things to, because I'm telling you, and I'm only half joking when I say the idea of a little robot scooting around like something out of Star Wars with this big arm sticking out of its head does not settle me.
Yeah. And this is why we need to look more holistically at that problem. I think a lot of the time when we say we've got robots working alongside people in these environments, we go straight to safety, and we say, okay, we need to be able to see somebody. We need, you know, some safety rated LIDAR system. It's going to stop. It's going to do all of these things. That is all true, but there's also other elements to how we remain safe. You know, we need to be predictable. We need to be able to communicate intent while we're out there, so that other people in that environment can sort of see that machine and go, okay, I know it's going to turn left, or I know it's going to stop here, and it's wanting to do this thing. If you make them unpredictable, they're less safe, even if you have these sorts of sensors on board. I want to come into the collaboration part a little bit here too, because collaboration is two-way. You've got the collaboration with a human trying to deliver some sort of value on that perspective, but you've also got to come back and say, okay, what's the understanding of what the humans in those environments, or the workers in those environments, are trying to achieve and what they're trying to do? And how can I give them enough context in order to achieve that task effectively? So let me give you an example. If we've got a robot out there laden with sensors, we're capturing a lot of information about the world. Perhaps that robot needs help with something. It runs into an error, it's blocked. Maybe there's a pallet in the rack when it didn't think there should be. All of a sudden, we've got this situation where that machine or that system needs some input from a human. All too often, that side of the equation is not thought about. And so the minute that happens, we lose the ROI and the productivity that we were gaining by putting automation in that system, because all of a sudden we've got downtime, the robot's sitting there, somebody has to be available to try and figure out where it is on the floor and go and rescue it. So by thinking about that side of it, we can say, okay, the robot's in a situation, it needs a little tiny bit of help with something. Maybe it just needs to know, all right, this place location's full. Do you want me to go and put it back where I got it from? Do you want me to go and stick it over in triage? Like, what do you need? And so being able to ask a remote operator with the right information, the right question, means that we can get that system moving very, very quickly. And so sort of that holistic view in terms of how we design that interaction.
Stepping back, Frank, one of the things that the collaborative arm solved was the reduced need for guarding, the reduced need for, you know, where you can have people in certain areas or out of certain areas. And so, you know, so that was kind of the initial intent. And I think that what's happening is all these other things. So AMRs and AGVs and arm robots and other things, there's a lot of other applications that are coming forward. And now there's other roles for people to kind of step into that there's a different need for the associate today than there was before. And so, so Matt Bush, what kind of to add on to that, what are the things that, what actual applications are you seeing these collaborative applications solve?
Right. So within the warehouse space, again, we're focusing on low force, low speed when you're around humans, but palletizing is one of those use cases that is very commonplace where you see a collaborative process. And then also packaging, it's the pick and place operation. You're picking something and putting it into a box. Machine tending is another application we're seeing. You see robotics at the end of an automatic storage and retrieval system. And then even quality inspection, where a robot is equipped with a vision system and it's making sure that the object that's going to a customer meets the quality specifications that customer expects. But really, those applications are governed by safety risk assessments. Each of those applications, you've got to look at the risk with that application and look at it from three different factors: likelihood of a risk occurring, severity of an injury, and the frequency and exposure of a human to that risk. And then you move on from there after you identify those risks and understand what controls you need to put in place to mitigate that. So that's an important aspect to any application that's deployed out in industry today.
Okay, so we've got robots watching robots now. Is that what so eventually the humans are going to be out of this entirely. That's going to be fine. Timmy doesn't need to be here, right? But
the humans create problems working around robots because we want to keep them safe. Robot to robot collisions is not going to be that big, but we want to make sure that humans are kept safe, and that's really the importance of that safety risk assessment that I described.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many implications, right? When you're implementing robots in a facility, and especially, and Randy, maybe you can talk to this a little bit. We're working on a presentation for the next trade show for the Iraq Manufacturers Institute, and one of the presenters wants to highlight kind of the difference between forklifts that are human driven and AMRs, AGVs, and autonomous vehicles in facilities, and the difference between what you need to guard for on human-driven applications versus AMRs and AGVs. He said he went to a facility that's been operation for quite a few years, and there's no damage to the pallet racks. And so the guarding all looks like it's brand new, was installed today, because there's nobody bumping into things and doing things that are, you know, but in a, you know, in a traditional warehouse, you kind of see little bent, you know, dings and things like that from forklifts. So Randy, can you kind of add to that a little bit?
Sure. Well, there's a couple things there. One is, you know, and I think people will freely say this, the most unpredictable thing in a warehouse are people. And the more dangerous, unpredictable thing in a warehouse is a person on a forklift. It just happens to be, you know, a historical perspective. So when you do go into warehouses, you notice a couple of things. One is, if the AMRs are moving around, or automated self-guided forklifts are moving around, you don't notice a lot of beeping going on, which is pretty typical in the, it's a protocol. So they're honking the horn. The forklift drivers are honking the horn forwards, backwards. There's a lot of noise. And so I'd just go back to environment. It's a lot quieter when AMRs are moving around than people driving forklifts. There's also less damage to the items, because there are, you know, they're following a specific guidance system. If they're outside that guidance system, they'll stop, or they'll go into an alarm mode requiring some minor intervention if necessary, or they'll go into a jog mode. The rack that was put in place at the origin, it's less banged up. It has less danger of collapsing because it's not getting banged up. You know, there's a very predictable schema to how these AMRs are driving or maneuvering around a warehouse, both from a speed standpoint and from a precision standpoint.
Do the does this make the rack guys nervous, because now their racks won't break and they can't have to...
quite the opposite, right? Because every time something comes down, or every time something happens, you know, there's somebody looking to point a finger.
That's a good point.
Rack Manufacturers Institute and rack manufacturers are looking to do is to eliminate that potential of liability, right? And so they, you know, and obviously what with MHI, what they do is they write the standard that goes into the building codes and things like that. But the unknown is that worker on a forklift, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And then also the unknown is whether or not that those racks are inspected and repaired properly, and, you know, and there's so many other factors that go into it that all require human intervention to make sure that everything remains safe. And it, frankly, I think the autonomous and mobile solutions eliminate a lot of that, because they just simply don't run into things unexpectedly.
We've seen the thing with pallets as well. Pallet manufacturers actually love us, because we're not smashing pallets in a building, and then therefore, you know, causing problems with the payloads on them and those kinds of things. And then, you know, but on the point of saving racking, you know, robots don't get tired or forgetful. You know, that they'll pick up a load, they know what the weight of that payload is, they'll know what the capacity rating of a given rack is, they'll know the payload size, they're not going to try and shove it inside a rack. So, you know, you're actually protecting a lot of the payloads that are happening in the building as well. So you're getting a lot less sort of damaged product and some of these issues that sometimes you see in fully manual operations.
So Matt, with the remote driving, does that have a similar effect as having it be autonomous, because of the sensors and everything on there that are preventing them from doing that as well, or getting outside of a path? So even though you still have a human driver, you're still not, you know, creating the incidents and accidents that could possibly happen with somebody on a sensorless truck, right?
Yeah, and so I like to say we give remote operators superpowers. You know, you've got access to these different sensors that you wouldn't otherwise get if you were just manually operating. So A couple of examples would be we can use some of our sensors to tell you inside of a different bay whether the machine's predicting you're going to collide in a certain place in that bay. So we can, because we can see that area so well, we're able to say, hey, this back left corner as you're operating is, you know, we predict you might actually hit this. So maybe go a little bit right, for example. Driving is the other one. So we have a thing we call collision shield, which is we use our sensor suite and our obstacle detection suite to prevent remote drivers from driving into things. So we will apply the brakes. We will give you warnings. We'll do all those kinds of things as you're doing it. You can choose to turn some of these things off. And there are actually use cases that people want to do it, but then we can downgrade the machine as well. So we restrict your speed, we restrict some of the things you can do while you're in somebody's operating mode. So from that perspective, we're really utilizing the capabilities of that autonomous forklift and giving that back to the remote operator so they can do their job even more effectively.
It's the, go ahead.
I was going to say, I hope that it's that they can't turn it off or ignore it like my friend did in his Tesla when he ignored the backup warning and still backed into my truck.
Yeah, no, and this is why we restrict the operation, right? So it's like, you know, we say, okay, well, we're only going to allow you to go like very, very slowly, or, you know, we're going to prevent you from doing anything that's drastic in that side of things. But, you know, when you're remotely operating a very, very heavy forklift and you're doing it at 3.5 meters a second, you know, you want to make sure that they're not going to accidentally like, oh, I'm just going to grab my coffee and, you know, sort of we'll look after you in those situations.
Go ahead, Frank.
No, it's funny you said that, because I was going to say, like, this is like the Tesla of forklifts here, right? You know, it's all automated and whatever. And this is what I've been dreaming about. You know, I told my wife, I've told her for years now, like, as soon as these things drive themselves and I don't have to be involved, sign me up. I'll sell a kidney. I don't care what I got to do. I don't want to be involved in the driving process if I don't have to. Right. And I guess in a way, you know, one of the big things that you hear, you know, the scary things that people throw out there all the time is it's like, oh, well, you know, we're taking jobs, or, oh, we're, you know, these things aren't safe or whatever. It sounds like everybody, these problems are being solved. Like this will be a non-conversation a year from now or 2 years from now. I mean, like, there will not even be anything to talk about in terms of those things that have been sort of fears. Now, I know there'll be other challenges and other things that'll come up, but and I don't know if maybe this is, I know it's a little off of what we had kind of prepped for, but like, I kind of want to get a sense of, like, here we are 10 years in the future or 20 years, whatever it is, right? What does this look like? What is it? You know, what do those warehouses look like? Is it fully automated? I mean, do people even exist in there? Like, what's going on in there now?
Matt Bush, what's the integrator seeing? Yeah, what are you guys working towards? Is it truly a dark warehouse where you don't even have to have lights on?
And if so, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think dark warehouse would be in the future, but dark warehouse, you've got a caveat there. Any kind of equipment's got to be maintained. So the maintenance folks do need some lights on at some point. So
that's BYOL.
So there will be.
Bring your own light. Lights on.
We touched on humanoids earlier. I think those are really exciting for the future. I think they've got a ways to go, but it looked like yesterday I caught a story the Chinese government is promoting humanoids by 2025. So that's just 2 years away. Well, you've got some government entities that are getting behind to push the technology. When you see that, you will see other governments getting in line. Typically, you saw that with the space race back in the 60s. You see technology, you see building blocks of technology. We've been talking about AMRs. Frank, you mentioned not wanting to drive, wanting autonomous vehicles. Those technologies at a lower level are building blocks to get to that higher level. So you see a lot of corollaries with an AMR to a vehicle in the long term. So
yeah, Andy, what are you seeing? Yeah, please.
Well, I would equate it a little bit to the shock that I experienced recently in buying a new car. I'm kind of one of those guys that buys a car and holds on to it for a while. So I bought in the obviously several waves ago, back in 2004, when there was no Bluetooth, when there was no Apple iPod dock, when there was no GPS built into the car, when there was no backup camera in the car, when there was no sensing that you're offline, no automatic.
What the heck
text.
Kind of car was this, Randy? A Model T? What were you driving? Yeah.
It actually had powered seats and windows, and heated seats. But now, you know, cars have cooling seats, and so when I look back and I say, I like that car, but boy, I love this workstation I'm in now that I'm driving that can see 360. It can show me things. That's kind of where we're at in the warehouse workstation environment, is that all this cool stuff is enabling. It makes it a comfortable place to be. And obviously we can see that being a remote very soon. Where people could take this technology, because they can see everything now, and they can manage everything with the road sensing that could be. So my expectation after this experience is that we're going to see a lot more of that. That the, you know, that this AI development, this remote management development, is going to be greater. And I'm just equating what I would call a human workstation today with sitting in the driver's seat of a car. We have a lot of, in the AMR world, we have air conditioning on workstations, because people aren't walking around the warehouse. Maybe it's a fan, maybe it's better lighting, maybe it's cushioning under their feet that they don't have to, that can be there at a workstation. There's lift assist. So if you're picking big things up, there's lift assist, and that goes, the next generation of that is cobots. Helping workers lift. There's counting systems. So all these functions and features that we're experiencing in our automobiles are kind of being added and from a productivity standpoint to today's workstations, whether they're fully automated or semi-automatic. That's where I see the future going.
Yeah, Matt Willis, I think you had some additional. I saw you kind of.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, a lot of that job is, you know, I see it shifting. You know, obviously our approach is around shared autonomy and having a single operator look after many forklifts. So it's no longer a one-to-one relationship between I'm going to sit here and I'm going to drive one machine, I'm going to do this task, be that on the machine or remotely. Now it's, you know what, we don't need people to drive from A to B or pick and place pallets in these certain locations. Like, we've got that covered. We just need you to do like the really hard or the edge cases or the exception cases that we all know happen in these warehouses. But you asked a little bit like what could the future look like? I think we have this transition to get through. Often when we look at sort of an automation system, we're thinking about, all right, let's imagine we're building a brand new warehouse. You know, what could that do? And there's plenty of applications for that. The reality is there's a lot of square footage of warehouse already out there that have been designed and built with humans in mind. So I think designing a system that's flexible and allows humans to be a part of it and takes into account the fact that there are going to be people around it or people are going to be operating it is going to be key just from a change in adoption perspective. So once we get through that shift, I think you'll start seeing the environments themselves change. So like, you know, take aisle widths, for example. They need to be wider because, you know, humans want to sort of, you know, hook in there and then get around and whatever. But given the precision of automated systems, you can start to reduce things like aisle width and therefore increase density in these facilities and make better use of these spaces. So I think you'll find the environments themselves are going to change a fair bit as we deploy more and more automation systems in them.
Well, one of the things that has been talked about a lot is the applications that are kind of the holy grail, right? The picking applications, the, you know, and certain industries have applications that are more difficult than others. Like a grocery might be more difficult because of just the random nature and also the produce portion and things like that. What are the things that are solvable today that aren't being solved? And what are the things that are in the future that you think will be the things that humans will have to do for the foreseeable future and beyond, because it just isn't something that can be done by robotics? So we'll start with you, Matt Bush.
I think there are several holy grails out there. One that you see being tackled by many different companies is truckload unload. I think truck loading, you have a little more control over the pallet quality and the product that is on that pallet. So I think that's going to be the more achievable use case. But again, I think the safety risk associated with that and humans working around that truck dock, that's really the obstacle that's got to be overcome. So that's one of those holy grails. You've got robotic piece picking, many companies out there trying to tackle that as well. And again, I think that's the sensors being able to catch up and the grippers being able to catch up with what humans can do. It's not there yet. All the piece picking solutions out there, they cannot pick every product that is presented by any given customer. So I think those are two of the holy grails that I see that people are still shooting for and trying to achieve today.
Randy, additional thoughts?
Yeah, I would certainly concur with Matt. I think we're seeing I think we're when you look holistically at solving problems in the supply chain, I think we have to look at packaging, and I think there's a lot being done in packaging today that you wouldn't even think about 10 years ago. How a manufacturer packages something is really how it can be, how it can be managed at a case or a pallet level. Nowadays, they're looking at how can it be managed at a piece pick level, and how can robots be able to handle that pallet for piece picking or that case for piece picking, and how can that correlate with the kind of automation that's in a facility? A lot of these major CPG companies, they own that supply chain, and they're able to automate that at the packaging level. So I would add packaging to it, and I think the general demand out there, and we're seeing this driven by the leaders in the industry, is not only the packaging in, but the packaging out, and what something ultimately travels in. I think of, some of the work that gets done that's very difficult, like folding a shirt. You pick a shirt up, and how you fold it and put it in a package. Robots will eventually get there, but right now that's a real challenge. But when you look at shoes, shoes come in a box with a top on it. That just doesn't, it seems like a lot of space for a pair of shoes to, or a pair of boots to journey their entire life in. So there, I think packaging really makes a big difference, whereas in terms of how it could be automated.
Matt Willis.
Yeah, and these problems to solve are why I love my job, actually, because there are a ton of opportunities. I think Matt and Randy have hit on some great ones. We certainly get asked about trailer loading and unloading as well, especially given where we're interfacing with pallets and these kinds of things. One thing that one tact I'd like to look at is there's a lot of opportunities that are sort of low-hanging fruit that are just sitting there for the taking, I believe. And so when you start to think about, all right, now we have a autonomous machine moving through an environment, it's covered in 3D LiDAR, and it's got cameras on it, and it's got all these sorts of things, the possibilities start to really open up. Without giving too much away, there's imagine that now I'm driving through a warehouse and I'm doing things like, cycle counting, or I'm, doing stock management, or I'm doing some of these other periphery tasks that might not be my primary task of moving the pallet. But hey, I'm there. I can see it. I can give that information back to the customer, and they can get a lot of value from these sorts of things.
Like in parallel, while it's doing other things, it's doing three and four tasks that we would have needed several people to do, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
Wow.
why not? I mean, and that's the beauty of robotics. Like, obviously, I'm a massive robotics nerd, but that's the beauty of having these things in these environments, is being able to leverage some of the technology that's already existing there, just to sort of pick up some of these opportunities as we go.
Matt Bush, this was a podcast that was put together by the TRG Group. Where can they learn more about the robotics group of MHI?
So the robotics group is is part of MHI. We strive to put out a lot of content, such as blogs on various topics facing the industry, and also we conduct seminars at MHI trade shows and other industry trade shows as well. The key aspect of the robotics group is that we bring a diverse background from many different suppliers throughout the material handling industry and how they interface, how each one of those companies interface with robotics. But to find out more information about the TRG group, you can go to mhi.org/TRG.
Perfect. Thank you. Frank, did you learn anything today?
A couple things. One, apparently I may have oversimplified some things by saying there's going to be this army of angry robots on tractor, you know, treads with giant arms hanging out of their heads. Okay, I get it, right? I get it. But it is interesting to listen and hear sort of where this is headed. It's almost like there's going to come a time when the human robot interaction is going to be so seamless that you're almost going to not be able to tell where one begins and where the other ends. And what we're really ended up doing here, it sounds like, is we are letting the humans and the robots do those things for which they were designed best, right? So leave the thinking, you know, the really complex thinking parts that require certain kinds of reaction and judgment and stuff to the humans, but leave the stupid stuff that, you know, that they're actually not very good at because they run into wrecks and they do all kinds of other things, right? You know, that they're not as good at, and leave that to the robots and, you know, kind of really increase the efficiency and productivity of the industry. It's going to be kind of interesting.
I'll leave you with a final thought, Frank. When you're driving around and you see these big boxes, these big buildings, use your imagination now and try to picture what's inside, because some of them will be fully manual and there won't be much but racks and shelves, but some of them will have everything we've talked about inside, but you don't know which ones. And actually, you could probably guess if it's a middle of the day and there's only a handful of cars outside of which one you're looking at.
Good call.
So thank you all three of you for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about the TRG Industry Group, there's also a blog page you can follow, which is mhiwarehouseautomation.com. And then, you know, follow this podcast and share it with your friends. And we thank everybody, Matt and Randy, for joining us today.
Thank you for joining the MHI Industry Leadership Podcast. Join us next time to learn more about the trends, technologies, solutions, and best practices that are moving the industry forward.